Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, supporting marriage and the family. We have a full report on Pope Benedict's weekend visit to Valencia, where he presided at the closing of the fifth World Meeting of Families. And still struggling to find sense out of loss, the mother of one of the victims of last year's London terrorist attacks talks of her faith, her hopes, and her commitment to peace. Welcome to the programme. Pope Benedict returned to the Vatican on Sunday after a whirlwind weekend visit to Valencia for the closing of the fifth World Meeting of Families that has been taking place in the Spanish city over the past 9 days. During the visit, the Pope met privately with Spanish Prime Minister José Luis Zapatero, as well as with King Juan Carlos and his family, and he prayed at the site of last week's underground train crash, which killed 42 people. But the main focus of Pope Benedict's trip to Valencia, like that of his predecessors to the city in 1982, was a strong defence of marriage and the family. In a country which has recently introduced legislation liberalising divorce and same-sex unions, the Pope warned against such moves away from traditional Catholic values and towards a society based on subjective and selfish desires. My colleague Charles Collins has been in Valencia following this papal visit. He reports now on Sunday's Mass in the city's ultra-modern Arts and Science Centre.
En la cultura actual se exalta muy a menudo la libertad del individuo concebido como...
Pope Benedict warned that attempts are being made to organize the life of society on the basis of subjective desires alone. The Pope was speaking during the Sunday Mass, which concluded the fifth World Meeting of Families in Valencia, Spain. A huge percentage of the 1.5 million people gathered in and around Valencia's City of Arts and Sciences have been there for nearly 24 hours. They'd arrived the day before to claim a place for Saturday's vigil and never left. They were still full of energy, waving flags from countries around the world and from the different regions of Spain. Some people watched the Mass from their balconies. Several apartment buildings and hotels circle the site, which is Valencia's main convention center. They were witnesses to an historic event, the Bishop of Rome celebrating Mass with what is believed to be the Cup of Christ, the Holy Grail itself, which is kept in the Cathedral of Valencia. The Holy Father follows the tradition of Pope John Paul II, who celebrated Mass with the sacred vessel when he visited Valencia in 1982. During his homily, the Pope said the new attempts to organize society have no reference to objective and foundational truths, such as the dignity of each human person and his inalienable rights and duties. The Pope reminded the people that the Church teaches us to respect and foster the marvelous reality of the indissoluble marriage between a man and a woman, which is the origin of the family. The situation of the family in the world and the attempts to undermine it with new legislation on abortion, divorce, and same-sex marriage has been a constant theme of the 9-day-long meeting here in Valencia, but Pope Benedict chose to concentrate on the positive aspects of the family in today's world. He reflected on the readings from the Book of Esther and the second letter of St. Paul to St. Timothy, and how both works spoke of the family's role in transmitting the faith, which was the theme of this fifth World Meeting of Families.
La familia se nos muestra así como una comunidad de generaciones y garante de un patrimonio de tradiciones. Ningún hombre se ha dado el ser a sí mismo, ni ha adquirido por sí solo los conocimientos elementales para la vida.
He said that none of us gave ourselves life or single-handedly learned how to live. All of us received from others both life itself and its basic human truths, and we have been called to attain perfection in relationship and loving communion with others.
I trust that your experiences here will have strengthened your commitment to promoting the integrity of family life.
The Pope pointed out that faith is not merely a cultural heritage, but the constant working of the grace of God who calls us and our human freedom, which can respond or not. He said that although no one can give this answer for another, Christian parents are still called to give a credible witness of their Christian faith and hope, so their children can receive God's call with the utmost clarity and authenticity.
Los hijos crecen y maduran humanamente en la medida en que acogen con confianza ese patrimonio y esa educación que van asumiendo progresivamente.
During the Mass, married couples led the prayers of the faithful, speaking in 7 different languages.
All the pastors of the church, bishops, priests, and deacons.
That they may be united to their communities and assist them in transmitting the faith to the younger generations, together with the religious and social values that Jesus Christ entrusted to us, and that they may be comforted by new vocations to the priesthood and to the religious life. Let us pray to the Lord.
After the Mass, the Pope recited the Angelus and greeted pilgrims from around the world.
May God abundantly bless you and the souls you represent, and through the intercession of Mary, Mother of the Church, may you and your families be filled with the wisdom of her Son.
He ended the 5th World Meeting of Families by announcing that it will occur once again in 2009. The 6th World Meeting of Families will be hosted by Mexico City. After the Mass, Pope Benedict went directly to the airport, leaving Spain with a final word. He said that he is confident that with the help of God, this World Meeting of Families will keep echoing like a joyful song, the love, life, and faith shared by families, and help today's world to understand that the marriage covenant, whereby man and woman establish a permanent bond, is a great good for all humanity. Reporting from Valencia, Spain, I'm Charles Collins.
Formando el pueblo de Dios. Ben, ben, ben.
Well, those concerns about marriage and family life were at the heart of the 9-day international gathering taking place in Valencia with the theme Transmitting the Faith Through the Family. Participants from across the globe came to discuss problems facing families in their different cultural contexts and to share ideas for upholding Catholic values within our increasingly secular societies. While there were many worries amongst those dealing with the all-too-familiar problems of divorce and family breakdown, there was also plenty of discussion about positive church programs which are supporting young couples seeking a lifelong commitment to each other. Charles Collins spoke with 2 of the American delegates, Betty Ann Casaretti and Father Robert Weiss from the Diocese of Bridgeport, Connecticut.
I was invited to come by the diocese because we are in the process of reorganizing our family life and our marriage preparation program. And the director of our religious formation felt that this would be an important conference for us to attend to get some ideas, to get a more global perspective, and to see really what the needs are in terms of helping couples prepare themselves for marriage and hope, pray for family life as well.
And I'm the director of Young Adult Ministry, and I'm intimately involved with the new marriage preparation program and looking at aspects of family life. And in fact, we've brought a delegation from our diocese, which represents an ethnic cross-section of young couples and families that will hopefully be part of a new diocesan initiative towards family life.
Okay, that's interesting. Now tell me a little bit about this new diocesan initiative.
We feel that the present pre-Cana program really is not touching all the needs that couples have in going into marriage. It certainly touches some of the very practical things, getting along with your in-laws, how to choose friends before and after marriage, financial issues. But it's not talking about the more intimate parts of marriage and what's going to sustain a couple in that marriage. We're trying to use the theology of the body as a foundational point in expanding the pre-Cana program. Betty can address the new format, but it's basically helping couples realize that it's more than just a day, that it's a lifetime, and that it is a commitment, and it's deeply rooted not only in their love for each other, but God's love for them.
Let's go talk about the format.
Well, we're just really moving from Father Weiss's point of looking at a new model for marriage preparation, looking at helping young couples understand the sacramental sexuality of marriage, and also dealing with the everyday issues that they need to. But again, really raising the bar now through the theology of the body, giving them, I guess, a language that can help them to maneuver and function and succeed in their marriages, giving them new lenses to see through, as Pope John Paul II said, just helping correct their vision in this culture of death, in this darkness they've been looking through, now to enable them to see the light. And hopefully this new program will enable them to start grasping these truths. And it's a tremendous form of catechizing these young couples also, at the same time as preparing them for to receive the sacrament of matrimony.
Now, as people who work with young people who are preparing to get married, a lot of people say that this younger generation just isn't interested in religion, isn't interested in what the church has to say. They're only coming to the church for a pretty wedding. Is that a fair assessment of young people?
I think, you know, I've been a priest for 33 years now, and I think initially when I became a priest, it was like, if it works, great. If it doesn't work, fine. We can just get divorced. The couples that are coming now to the church to get married, there's a new seriousness about them. Many of them are the victims or the products of divorced marriages. They don't want that for themselves. They don't want that for their children. So they're coming into a marriage with a much better purpose, a much better attitude. And the ones that really are not into that aren't coming to the church. They're being married in alternative ways or ways they're not, they don't feel those are as perhaps restrictive. We're also, you know, re-identifying what is vocation in our diocese. And it's important, you know, we're not looking so much at the shortage of priests and religious, but we're looking at the breakdown of family where vocations are born. And so we're trying to help couples see that marriage is a vocation. It's not a state, it's a vocation. And out of that vocation, they foster other vocations, all of which keeps building up the church. So it's kind of a two-pronged issue right now. But I would say couples coming to us for marriage are much more serious. And I would say that men are much more highly invested than they ever were before, not just in marriage, but certainly in child-rearing, and seeing that, a big change in that.
You know, I would add that in working with young adult ministry, what I've seen from these young couples who are preparing to marry is that they're older. They're mature. They have some life experiences. They've had a lot of disappointments. They've had a lot of pain. And they've gotten to the point where they want and they believe. Well, let's just say they're starting to believe that the church may have an answer. And also to help them in the healing process of getting through and enabling them to experience the more that God has always planned for them. And also to offer them, through the sacrament of reconciliation, that way back into the family and enable them to reestablish that relationship with Mother Church and to, again, really fulfill what God has called them to through the vocation of marriage.
Charles Collins speaking there with two of the American delegates at the 5th World Meeting of Families in Valencia, Betty Ann Casaretti and Father Robert Weiss from the Diocese of Bridgeport, Connecticut. Now, over to the United Kingdom. 1 year on, dozens of grieving families, hundreds of injured, disabled and traumatised. As the City of London marked the first anniversary of the bombings that killed over 50 people, Britons across the nation observed 2 minutes' silence and held public and private memorials for all those affected by the attacks. Floral tributes were laid at the sites where suicide bombers blew themselves up on 3 underground trains and a bus, and bells tolled at the exact time the bombs exploded on the morning of July 7th, 2005. A public memorial ceremony was held in central London's Regent's Park, while not far away in Westminster Cathedral, Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor spoke at a requiem mass for all the victims and their families. As he acknowledged the pain of those who lost loved ones in the attacks, he also spoke of the hope that faith brings to those who refuse to let death have the last word, those who defy the logic of terror and continue to fight for peace, for justice, for an end to such hatred and fear.
The world in which we live today is being characterized by violence and war and terror. We need to restore peace into the dictionary and into the lives of the young people who will carry the world on.
Marie Fatai Williams lost her only son, Anthony, in the blast that destroyed the number 30 bus in London's Tavistock Square. He had been due to return to his native Nigeria for the holidays, but instead Marie flew to London. And standing at the site of the bombing with a picture of Anthony in her hand, she spoke of the pain of all parents who lose children to such senseless violence. "Hatred begets only hatred," she said. "It's time to stop this vicious cycle of killing."
And later on that night, when others had left, my husband now told me that Anthony would not be in a position to come back to see us. We would have to go to see him where he was. And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Because, Marie, the worst that we imagined has happened, and Anthony can't come to see us."
1 year on, Marie still finds it hard to speak of her family's loss, of the fear and uncertainty as they waited for confirmation that Anthony was among the dead. As a devout Catholic, she spent those days in prayer, struggling to hold on to her faith, despite the suffering she continues to endure.
You see, the first thing I asked in my solitude was, "God, where was Anthony's guardian angel when this happened?" Because we heard that he helped other people. He showed them where to go out of the underground, put some in the right buses. And I said, "Lord, if he was doing this for others, couldn't his guardian angel have guided him right or stopped him in his track or make my phone calls to him at the time, reach him so he would stop?" Because at the time when I called him from Lagos that morning, he must have still been alive, but just maybe getting ready to get into the bus. But then at the same time, it is all of this that makes me realize, therefore, that there must have been a reason for this. God that I serve, a good and faithful, loving God, does not kill, but he allows some of these things to happen so that we might see and learn lessons. And if he has brought this to my doorstep, it means he wants me to do something about it. And I said, "Lord, thy will be done. Use me as you wish, if it is for your peace, if it's for the greater glory of your name and for humanity, so be it. And if Anthony lives, like you tell me in my heart, that Marie, he lives, it means it's not in my own terms, but in God's terms, which means he lives forever." And that's my faith. That's what I had professed. This has been a hard case test of my faith. And I choose to believe that Anthony lives with our Blessed Mother.
You've also been doing a lot in a very practical way, haven't you, since that tragedy? You've set up a foundation for peace and conflict resolution. Tell us a bit more about this, what its aims are, what you hope it will achieve.
Yeah, I have set up that foundation. I wrote to the Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor, recently accepted to be a patron. Yes, we intend to work for peace, religious tolerance and harmony, mutual understanding, and then we intend to facilitate multi-faith dialogues. We intend to work with young people, youths, sort of get, hopefully, Global Center for Peace and International Understanding going, so that young people can come together from across the world and across faiths to come and learn how to resolve issues in a non-violent manner. Because the world in which we live today is being characterized by violence and war and terror. We need to restore peace into the dictionary and into the lives of the young people who will carry the world on. And like the late Pope John Paul II said, peace rests on two pillars: commitment to justice and forgiveness. And I use that as a guiding principle. I also use the fact that he said, young people of this millennium should not be afraid to be the saints of the millennium. And if so many young people who are being killed all over the world are banding up in heaven, then they must be saints because they are innocent victims of war and terror. And we cannot let them die in vain. We've got to be able to fight the battle for them by keeping them alive and doing that which would bring peace and not more and more killings in the world.
Marie, you've also written a book, haven't you, called For the Love of Anthony.
Yes.
Is that really, as you say, to try and help you keep Anthony's memory alive, or is it really for other people who are struggling with similar kinds of tragedies?
Yes, it's more than keeping Anthony's memory alive. It's to show other mothers, other people out there, what this terror or violence can do to a family or to someone like me. There are many Maries out there, many mothers, cut across the world, cut across creed, cut across nations, that are not able to voice out what has happened to them and their loved ones. I stand, by the grace of God, to represent them and let people know what it is. And at the same time, show that we can choose a path that is different from other paths. That is the path that leads to peace and bring out good from evil instead of continuing the vicious cycle of hatred and a life for a life each time.
You must think often about those men who chose to take your son's life and the lives of all those other people who died on the 7th of July. What is your message to those who helped organise those attacks, those who still see this use of terror as a way of achieving their aims?
I ask them what aims and what cause has been served. Okay, they've killed Anthony. As far as I'm concerned, they killed his body and not his spirit, because he lives on and I live on. So, but what cause has been served? How many more converts have they to the cause? What reckless killing of innocent victims got to do with whatever cause? On the contrary, you drive away people who maybe have had any sympathy or for anything you said you were doing when you do things like this. It's not the way. It's very important for everybody to sit back, pull away from the edge and take stock and say, how far have we come? Are we succeeding or are we just working in an infernal cycle?
Finally, Marie, as you say, you have reached out to other families, other mothers, other parents who've lost children to conflict, who've lost children in such a violent way. What is your message to those grieving parents, those grieving families today?
Yeah, this book, For the Love of Anthony, is dedicated to not only the victims of 7/7, but to all mothers whose children have been lost innocently in war and terror. All I say to them, let's stand up for what is right. Let's stand up for our loved ones in peace and in humility for our common humanity. Let us call out and say enough, enough, enough is enough, because we can do it. We are the mothers, we are the women, we feel the pain, and we gave birth to these children. We can't just stop and stare and flop. We must rise up for something positive. It is very important to love and to show the way in spite of all odds. It's a difficult task, but they say from little acorns to great oaks grow. So let's contribute our little quarter, like the proverbial mustard seed, and let it grow and give shade and succor to others so that they may not know the pain that we have known.
You have the prayer of St. Francis, don't you, written on Antony's tombstone?
Yes. It is a very important prayer in my life. Make me a channel of your peace. I've always prayed that prayer, but I never knew that I would one day come back or have a reason to actually live or walk the talk. And so it is a prayer that I cherish and I hold dear. My daughters know it, they sing it. And that, and another tune that I know, which is, "Because he lives, I can face tomorrow. Because he lives, all fear is gone. Because I know that he holds my future. My life is worth a living because he lives." Those prayers, St. Francis' prayer, this one I've just told you, and the fact that I need your grace, for your grace is enough for me, Lord. Those are the pillars that I hold on to and that see me through every day.
There's despair in life, let me bring hope. Where there is darkness, only light. And where there's sadness,
Marie Fatai Williams, whose son Antony was killed in the London bus bombing of July 2005. Her book, entitled For the Love of Antony, was published by Hodder and Stoughton on the anniversary of those attacks.
As to console, to be understood, as to understand.
And that report brings us to the end of today's English feature programme, but we'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow, so be sure to join us then if you can. Thank you for joining me. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Don't forget you can find all our news and feature programmes on the internet. Look us up at www.vaticanradio.org and click on the English icon. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.